back 10 more years.
There's five now?
There are?
It said Avatar 2 back a year, Avatar 3 back 2 years, Avatar 4 back another, and it said Avatar 5.
Cameron's going to be dead before that's done.
Can only be so lucky. Welcome to the Everyone's a Critic movie review podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell.
I get people off. I look for the one guy who isn't getting off, and I make him get off.
With me, as always, is professional film critic, Sean Patrick.
I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
Visit us at ihatecritics.net, everyonesacriticpodcast.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Our handle is CriticsPod. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and Alexa. We're there, too. So if you want to listen to us there, just say, Alexa. How did you do it? You did it before.
Yeah, I listened to it this week on the Alexa. I said, just play the Everyone's a Critic movie review podcast.
And it did it. I knew there was a shot. I thought at one point they were just picking selected podcasts to be on Alexa, not everybody. And maybe they still are. I don't want to totally.
We've been personally curated.
My other podcast is not. I don't know about your other podcast, if they're on Alexa or not, but mine are not.
Actually, interestingly enough.
And it's funny. There's a story I was going to tell last week, but I forgot. I was at my son's baseball game, and I always wear my Everyone's a Critic podcast swag when I'm out. But I was at a baseball game, so I put on my Ivy Envy sweatshirt, and a guy walked up to me, my son's coach, and he goes, "Are you on that podcast? I love that show." And I thought I had my Everyone's a Critic shirt on, and I looked down, and I was like, "Nope, Ivy Envy, of course."
You gotta check your audience, though. I mean, it's a baseball.
Well, I know, that's why I wore the shirt. I just right. It left my head ever so briefly. But I don't know. And he said, "I love the show." I'm like, "Why?" In fairness, Corey gave me that joke via text after I told him the story, or a version of that joke.
Yeah.
What else? Patreon, ihatecritics.net/Patreon. The best way to help support the podcast to get a credit on the show. We do have a bonus episode with Josh, one last episode. I shouldn't say last. He'll be back again, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But. It will be coming out in the next week or so. So, you know, check that out if you want to hear that. Become a Patreon supporter or go to ihatecritics.net and click on the PayPal link. And then there's also the podcast merch, like I mentioned. It's in the podcast merch tab at ihatecritics.net. All those ways help support the podcast. If your RSS feed for the podcast is not working, go back to Patreon and I think they had to update them, so if yours is not automatically loading the new podcast, and it should be out before next week's episode is. So if you don't have it by then, hit me up on Facebook. I'll help you get it. I've had that happen to me on a couple other podcasts. Something Patreon's just doing something weird. So
Patreon's always weird with me. Like my banks won't even talk to Patreon sometimes. I have to go through PayPal now.
Oh, really?
My bank recognizes Patreon as a company that's not in this country, and they won't pay them. So I had to reset up Patreon through PayPal in order to actually to be part of the Patreons that I'm on.
Oh, that sucks. Yeah, I've noticed that. And some people just don't like doing Patreon because they do take a big chunk of it. But it makes it easy, and for the most part, it's a nice setup. We'll take whatever support we can get. And really, if you could buy some podcast merch and take pictures of it, tell your friends about the show, anything to help spread the word, that's kind of truly the best way to help the podcast is help us grow with downloads. This week, we got four new trailers. We'll start with Blinded by the Light.
Yeah, this is really cool. I had no idea what this was when it started, and I was kind of... Yeah, something about the hair design, kind of like, okay, that's a little cheesy 80s stuff, but you got to signify what decade you're in. But basically, this is a movie set in England. An Indian kid in England, transplanted there with his family, discovers Bruce, the music of Bruce Springsteen, and it starts to change his life. And I really loved this because I'm a huge Springsteen fan, and it really, it set me up. I like listened to all of, I've been listening to Bruce Springsteen all weekend now, working my way through each album. Like I'm on the river right now, honestly, in my car. I've always loved Springsteen, and this is such a great trailer. It does capture kind of that that magic you feel if you are a Springsteen fan, and about the emotionalism of his music and what it can mean, even in across so many different contexts. And I, the movie, has, this trailer is so great because it's got that this wonderful moment at the end with this great extra. So you get to the end of the trailer, and he and the kid has gone to America. And he's going through customs, and he stopped, and he's talking to the guy, and the guy asks him why he's coming to America. And he's like, "I've come to see the home of Bruce Springsteen." And the guy goes, "I can't think of a better reason to come to America than to see the boss's home." I love that guy. That guy's great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the world's biggest Springsteen fan. I don't dislike him. I don't understand why he's so popular and beloved. He's fine. I like some of his songs. But the level of icon that he is blows my mind. I'm more into that Beatles movie. I don't remember what that one's called. But it's still a neat idea. It's funny just the concept of this, in England, an Indian kid getting turned on to Bruce Springsteen. That alone is funny, so...
And I think music crosses every boundary, you know, and you don't have to love the same music as somebody right. to have that emotional connection to a piece of music that you share with a large group of people, whatever kind of music that is.
Right. And I think it's going to be a fun, neat little movie. I'd probably like it better if it was somebody else, maybe Tom Petty or something, I don't know, but it's fine. Loquisha, did I... Am I saying that wrong, or are you just laughing at the title?
I think that's the title. I don't know. It's the most racist talked about movie of the weekend. It trended on Twitter, even though this movie doesn't have a distributor. There's a comedian who made it, and he put the trailer out, I guess, on his Twitter, and people saw it and were just horrified and started sharing it, and it's become this big kind of thing where people are like, how is this racist nonsense being made still today? And it is certainly the idea here is that this guy is a bartender who wants to be a radio host, but he can't get a job because he's not a woman or black. And so he decides to invent a character who is a black woman, but him talking. So he's basically doing the single most racist impression of a black woman that he could possibly do, and he becomes a popular radio host because of it. And it's just the worst. It's just all of the worst traits of the angry white man.
It is funny. Even I ran into somebody that said, and it was a female, so it's really hard to be a white male in today's landscape, you know.
Oh, it's
I'm just kind of like,
we no. got it so hard.
I mean, look who's in charge. Everywhere you go, I'm not talking even Trump, I'm talking about in general. Look who's in charge. It's,
right.
Okay, so.
It's so hard. I can't be as racist as I used to be. And I have to tolerate the gay people. My life is so difficult.
That was part of the conversation, too, I think. But it's not... I've heard that too many times. You know, people actually believe that stuff, so...
I don't get... That is bizarre. I have had literally no problems in my life. Nothing compared... I mean, really, I've been poor, you know, and I've been on, like, food stamps and stuff. Like, I've been there, but it was like... There was never a chance that I wasn't going to come out of that. Whereas there are people who deal every day with never having come out of that.
Right.
And mostly because it's, you know, people taking opportunities from them just by looking at them. And I've never had that problem. You've never had that problem.
See, initially I thought this trailer was going to be similar to that. Who's that really popular radio host that does all the voices? He sits by himself. Now he's a podcaster.
I know who you're talking about. I can't remember his name, though.
Corey's going to kill me because he talks about him on like a daily basis. He was on Marin's show. Mm-hmm. He was funny, but that's kind of what I thought this trailer was going to go that direction. And then when it didn't, I was kind of like, oh, maybe this had a bigger statement to say. Oh, no, it doesn't.
It's funny. In Boston just this week, a sports radio show got busted because they had one of their interns calling into the show pretending, the white intern calling in and pretending to be a black guy, a very stereotypical black guy who was catchphrase was something about the baby wasn't mine or something, like just horrifically racist, and they got found out. Somebody did a little research and figured out who it was, and turns out they were just kind of catfishing this host that they have who didn't realize that this wasn't a real black guy calling in, literally didn't realize it. He didn't know that that his team was doing that to him. So it's kind of a double-edged, like, horrific controversy.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all for trying to make a statement, but make it a good, you know, I'm not against this idea with a different point of view that you're trying to get to, but yeah.
There could be a way for this to work if his point was, is that, look at what I'm able to do here and get away with as a white male that, somebody else couldn't get away with, but no, it's just... It comes off, whatever this guy's intent was, the trailer comes off like he's not necessarily angry, but like he doesn't understand why what he's doing is horrifically racist.
And if that's the, I guess if you get to the point where you understand it is, then fine. I'm okay with that. I mean, it's a little Adam Sandler-y, so, but... I'm sorry, I'm trying to buy time if I can find this guy's name. I want to, it's really...
The comedian, or...?
No, the radio host. That he's such a big name radio guy, and I can't. He's just totally left my head. Phil Hendry.
Phil Hendry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. This movie will probably never see the light of day.
It'll
see the light of day, but it won't be like. I don't think you're going to see it on Netflix or anything like that.
There's a lot of crap on Netflix. Hulu. If you dig down on Hulu, my God, there are homemade movies on Hulu.
Well, right, but...
There's a streaming service for just about everybody.
I'm okay with homemade movies, but, I mean, you don't see, like...
Tubi might have carried that.
I mean, I can see Amazon.
He trended this weekend, this guy in this movie. It trended this weekend, and sometimes that's enough for a distributor to go, that's hey,
true.
I can throw this out there and scam a few bucks off the racists.
And the racist point is that, well, but if a black guy pretended to be a white guy, it's okay when Dave Chappelle does it. Why can't I do it back? You're missing the point. It Chapter 2.
Awesome. Loved it. What a great trailer. I can't wait. Jessica Chastain is amazing. And this old lady they got in this trailer, basically the young girl from It is now grown up to be Jessica Chastain. She's gone back to Derry. She's gone back to the old apartment where she used to live. And there's an old lady living there, and this old lady is super creepy. And they build that creepy throughout this 3-minute trailer really, really well. I really dug it. I'm in, man. This was really cool.
It was a cool trailer, but at the same time, the further away I get from it, the more I dislike it. I don't hate it yet, but I think it's a little overrated, and... Especially when you have all these other horror movies that came out that were way better, that this one's still... I mean, Get Out, I guess, people would consider better, but people keep pointing back to It when you have things like Hereditary and all these other great horror movies that came out. And it's a good blockbuster horror movie, but that's kind of all it is for me.
Yeah.
That said, I like Jessica Chastain a lot, so I'm in. I'm going to see it. I'm just not as excited as I probably would have been immediately after seeing the first one.
I think part of it was I didn't expect the trailer. I didn't know when it was coming. I didn't anticipate it, and then there it was. I'm like, oh, let me take a look, and that's awesome. I love Jessica Chastain.
Yeah.
McAvoy and Bill Hader, I mean, they've done a hell of a job with casting on this just off of those three alone.
Well, and this is the hard part of the movie to make it. This is kind of where the TV series really fell apart, was the side of it.
John Ritter, Harry Anderson, good God.
Well, but then on top of that, the whole idea is kind of weak. Yeah. It works better in a book when you can use your imagination. So I'm curious to see how they pull it off. But they got the cast to do it, so that's exciting. And then there's Spider-Man Far From Home. with Avenger spoilers in it for the two or three of you that haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, and they've actually now added this trailer to the end of Avengers now. So if you go see Avengers this week, you can actually see this trailer at the end as the stinger, essentially. But yeah, this picks up in the wake of Endgame, and it does have spoilers about the death of Tony Stark and that all that type of stuff. Sorry, spoiler.
Nah, we spoiled it on our show.
You have time. You had your time.
Right.
Yeah, this is another really terrific trailer. Like I said, Spider-Man is a pretty great character. Everybody's going to go see this, and this is supposed to be actually the real capstone to the first phase of Marvel movies.
Really?
Yeah.
So it's not the first one of the night, or is it kind of both?
Kind of.
Jon Favreau's in the trailer an awful lot. I'm surprised they're making him as big of a character. Or maybe he won't be in it, the movie as much. But he's a big part of this trailer, which kind of shocked me. But, I mean, I like him, so I'm on
he's
board.
He's free right now, so I mean,
yeah, Lion King's done.
Happy the in character has some time to help out.
Yeah. And then Disney reset their schedule, which then pushed back Avatar 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever it was. I mean, I'm kind of misread. I thought there's only two more coming out, but according to this article, they had 2, 3, 4, and 5.
Ugh.
We're all getting pushed back. Star Wars is getting this new one, like, ends the 9 movie series or whatever. Then they go off and do other
Star Wars Phase 2?
Sort of. I guess they just do another stories within the world, don't they? I don't really.
I have no idea.
Sure. Where's Josh when he needs
20 minutes shouting later. He's shouting his Amazon Alexa right now.
20 minutes later, we can start the podcast. But now we can just jump right into Pokemon. Detective Pikachu. Speaking of worlds that you need to understand.
Right?
Jesus Christ.
If you don't know Pokemon, don't even bother seeing this movie because you're not going to understand most of it. This is a movie that kind of has a rather classical sort of detective genre story, but at its heart, really, it's just about fan-servicing Pokemon people because that's really where everything is. You know, there's little Pokemon Easter eggs throughout showing off characters that they love, and I'm guessing if I would have seen, if I had any idea what a Spritle is or a Chubblezor, whatever they're called, I might have got, oh, like, hey, yeah, I get that. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Okay, that's cute. I get that. But I don't. I don't have that identification, so I just did not care. And this is not Ryan Reynolds at his most Ryan Reynolds. He's really restrained by a PG rating here playing the voice of Pikachu.
Kind of. I mean, there are some pretty dirty jokes that were,
I totally missed them.
Well, I guess they're more innuendo than full-on dirty jokes, but I mean, I think they were kind of poor jokes. They weren't funny, but it was like, you know, that Shrek attempt to try to get the adults to enjoy it with the kids, it kind of missed for me.
Missed badly with me, yeah. I don't recommend this movie because unless you're a Pokemon person, you don't get most of this stuff. Justice Smith also doesn't do much to make you excited. He's not an actor who is lively and entertaining. Not to knock the kid, he's probably a fine actor, but he's a reactor here. He's not acting. He's reacting to things that aren't really there, and he doesn't have a lot of energy in those reactions. Ryan Reynolds is playing the voice of Pikachu. Pikachu has lost his memory following an accident, and in that accident, this kid, Justice Smith, Tim, his dad has gone missing. And the mystery story is that he's going to go looking for his dad with Pikachu's help. Pikachu can talk to Pokemon, and he can talk to people, and they can investigate the case, and it's all going to lead back to a character played by Bill Nighy, who has created Rhyme City, where Pokemon and people live together in harmony. And that's supposedly some kind of, I guess, in-universe thing that makes more sense, like Rhyme City, I guess, is a thing. Whereas regular Pokemon, like, it's all about training and battles. Like, you put your Pokemon against somebody else's Pokemon and they fight. That's a really small part of this movie. And in other movies, like, or in other stories, that's the biggest part, is those training and battles, and that's not in this movie. I don't care. I don't know. I know that stuff because other people told me. I didn't find any of that in the movie to understand it. It's odd. Like the bad guy in the movie, his whole plan at the end is basically seems like something that Pokemon people would want. I don't know. It's just me. Maybe that's my weird perception of who Pokemon people are. But
well, I didn't even totally follow the plan. Like they're just, you know, they're leaving people. You know, he's a good enough guy. You know, they're doing. Like the bad guy is not quite bad enough, mm-hmm. and but then it maybe it's consistent, maybe it's not. I was just kind of like, I don't know what the hell is going on. I mean, I follow, you know, the whole Pikachu storyline, but it was still the motivations and stuff. I could not. The bad guy changes to this guy. It all of a sudden, the bad guy is not the bad guy, but I don't know. It was just kind of all over the place, and I think you need to really know the world more so than even like Star Wars. Like, in a way, I appreciate that about this more so than Star Wars, because you really need to know the backstories to follow this movie. Star Wars is just kind of there, you know. You don't need to know who, what is it, Boba Fett is when he pops up on screen. Mm-hmm. You don't need to know that, but in this movie, you do need to know that stuff to really enjoy it. And it made $60 million. So
there are plenty of Pokemon people out there. I thought this movie, from a technical standpoint, from a story, from a structure standpoint, was really bad. That opening sequence is nonsense. It's pure chaos, and it ends so abruptly that you're thrust into this other aspect. So there's this, like, an escape from a facility and a car accident, and then boom, you're in a field somewhere, and a guy's like, hey man, you should have a Pokemon, but you don't have a Pokemon. Why don't you have a Pokemon? All right, go catch that Pokemon. Oh, he failed. Okay, moving on, next scene. The structure is garbage, and the production design is bullshit in those scenes. Like, it's really bad. Like, it's really, like, it's like Flintstones level bad at times in that, oh, those opening portions. It gets better when it gets to Rhyme City in terms of the production design, but I really didn't buy into much of it. The integration of Pikachu and Tim is fine. You know, it works, but I would say it doesn't even match up with even, like, Roger Rabbit in terms of being really great. Like, that movie's amazing, and that movie was, you know, 32 years old now.
Right.
So much better than this. I don't know, but like I said, if you're a Pokemon fan, you're going to love this. You're going to be very happy, you're going to recognize all the characters you get mentioned, and you're going to be excited about that. And it's all about fan service. It's about jerking off Pokemon fans, and if you're a Pokemon fan, you're going to love that.
And, you know, we say thumbs up to Star Wars movies that do that, so it's okay. I mean, my son liked it. I don't know how big of a Pokemon fan he is, but he's 7, so he just kind of, I think, surface level, he was fine.
Mm-hmm.
He's dumb enough to not get confused, I guess, at some of the motivations. And, you know, when that's all you are, it works for 7-year-olds, I suppose. Mm-hmm. 7-year-olds and Pokemon fans. God, I said fans wrong. I didn't want to see that one this week. I wanted to see another one, but we'll get to that later. That other one's not Palms, though, so we'll go to Palms.
Palms, yeah, what a piece of crap this is. And what a surprise! Oh, a Diane Keaton movie that sucks. That never happens. This one is controversial because Angelica Houston gave an interview to New York Magazine in which she mentioned kind of vaguely this movie, not even realizing what she was that it was actually coming out. I honestly don't think she actually knew that this movie was coming out this weekend.
When
she gave the interview.
Well, yeah, when was the interview done? You know, right. It's possible that it was done 2-3 weeks ago and they just released it this week. Mm-hmm. You know,
So basically, she just said that she doesn't get offered as many movies as she used to, and she's very selective about the movies she sees. She just said, I'm not going to do the, you know, grandma cheerleader movie, the grandma cheerleader reunion movie. I'm not going to do that one. That's too stupid for me. And not even realizing that this movie had been made and is coming out, which I love. Yeah. I love that about her. But read the whole interview. She's extraordinarily candid. She doesn't hold back, and that's what's great about her. She talks about everything. She talked about being in the house when Polanski was raping a teenager. Like, she was there.
Right.
She's very open about her and her relationship with Jack Nicholson. It's a really fascinating interview, and she's a fascinating lady, and I don't care that she ripped this piece of crap movie.
Well, yeah, I mean, fortunately, she was so candid. The headline wasn't about this movie. It was like Bill Murray this, or, you know, it was, the headline was something else. But this was definitely in that interview. But, yeah, it was, if nothing else, a good read. I mean, I'm sure it was a little exaggerated based on some. I mean, it's definitely a one-sided perspective.
Oh, everybody's making it out to be a feud, and she had to come out and apologize. Like, she didn't mean to offend anybody. Rhea Perlman's all butthurt about it. She canceled the talk show appearance because Angelica Houston was going to be there.
I mean, I'm surprised Angelica Houston would be there. I guess one more shock at that than anything else. But whatever, to each their own, but not as a movie.
It's really bad. It's really bad. So the idea here is that Diane Keaton is a woman who's got no children, got no extended family. She's retiring. And she's dying. She's dying of cancer. So she decides that she's going to move to a retirement community in a furnished home and just live out her days and just die by herself. That's the setup to this comedy that we're going to watch. Her plan to die quietly alone is interrupted by a character named Cheryl, played by Jackie Weaver, who's one of those classic movie characters who doesn't read social cues and doesn't understand when other people are comfortable or don't want them around. She just kind of forces herself into this other woman's life and forces her to be her friend. Eventually drags out of her that on her bucket list, Diane Keaton's bucket list, was being a cheerleader, and she didn't get a chance to be a cheerleader. So now she decides that, hey, we're going to be cheerleaders. We're going to make a cheerleading club in this community. But there are rules in this community. There's a woman played by Celia Weston, who basically makes all the rules of the community, and she doesn't allow for there to be a cheerleading group. They don't have 8 members. You have to have 8 members to have a club at this community. And so they've got to do an audition scene. So they're going to let everybody audition to be part of this cheerleading club. Well, you have to have 8 members no matter what, so why the fuck is anybody bothering to audition? If you show up, you're in, because you have to have the number. So why does this audition scene exist? It exists solely to humiliate and point and laugh at these old women doing these things as their audition to be part of the cheerleading club. So there's really the point here is just to point and laugh. Oh, look at old people doing young people things. See, look at that. Old people are doing young people things. Isn't that hilarious? It's so cute when old people do young people things. Oh, God, I hate this movie.
Do old people like it?
Maybe. I don't know. They appeared to be laughing, the crowd I was in. So maybe they liked it. I don't know. This movie sucks. It's no good. It's tacky. It's so poorly edited that at one point I thought, did they miss a reel in this movie? Did they forget to put a reel of the theme? This is a digital theater, so I can't possibly... Did they cut frames out of this or something that's missing? Because we slash cut in one point where the bad guy character, Celia, says you can't use the community room to practice your cheerleading anymore. Cut to slam cut to them in the community room being cheerleaders doing their practice. What the hell? But then... like 8 minutes later, they come back around and somebody's putting a sign up on the door that says quilting club. Because, you know, we're not cheerleaders and we're quilters. By then, it doesn't matter. You've already screwed up the continuity. It's like so, it's just so poorly put together. Plots are introduced about her teaching a teenage boy how to drive and then that disappears. But then it comes back at the end and it's important for some reason. Oh, man, this movie is bad. At the same time, it's like the least bad of the Diane Keaton movies. Like Diane Keaton has been toxic for 30 plus years now. And I would say that this is the first time I watched one of her movies. And I actually did have one laugh, Bruce McGill, legendary character actor. Bruce McGill has one line in this movie that he delivers with such energy and with such personal delight at his own timing and delivery that I had to laugh at just his own delight at his own joke. Other than that, this is just another failure for Diane Keaton.
She's been riding Annie Hall coattails her entire career. Oof. I mean, I think if the Angelica Houston interview hadn't come out, we may not even talk about this movie.
That's pretty much the only reason I decided to see it.
Tolkien, whatever.
Tolkien, yes. J.R.R. Tolkien, the creator of Lord of the Rings. This is his life story, played by Nicholas Holt, multiple act, two actors, him and a younger actor, because this goes all the way back to Tolkien's childhood in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And this doesn't even get to really him, actually, it just gets right up to him starting to write The Lord of the Rings. So this is all about the things that came into his life that influenced him to get there. We begin with him as a child, and his mother dies, and his mother is this very... I really loved this character, Mabel Tolkien, and of course I would not have the actress's name. She was absolutely brilliant in this movie, but she's this wild character who has all these wonderful stories to tell him and his brother growing up, and he gets his interest in lore and dragons from her, and it's really beautiful the way that that plays out and the way they use this character. And this she dies when he's very young, and it becomes kind of a defining tragedy for his life. And it's really Laura Donnelly is her name. Laura Donnelly, a wonderful actress who does an amazing job even under a terrible wig. She's really, really great in this movie.
But my grandma's got a terrible wig, so people wear terrible wigs.
Yeah. So he ends up going to a boarding house with a very rich lady who gets him into a nice boarding school. He meets new friends, and these friends form his fellowship of childhood friends that grow up and influence each other.
Did you use that word, or did they use it in the...
They use it in the movie.
Of course they do.
They form a group, and they give themselves a name that isn't fellowship, but they talk about fellowship. And they really talk. I love the way these characters talk. These characters are really super intelligent, like highly intelligent. The way that they talk about life and love and art, and they push each other to be more creative, is really exciting to watch. And really, it's fun to watch intelligent characters and listen to them talk and invent. And that's what we're watching here, is these characters learning to invent. Like, one of them's a poet, one of them's a composer, one's a painter, and they're always pushing each other in these directions. Of course, Tolkien's the writer, and they're giving each other ideas, and really, it's a really fun dynamic. And then they add to that with the character played by Lily Collins, who grows up to be, she grows up alongside Tolkien in this boarding house, and then they begin to form a relationship, and they grow up to fall in love with each other. Edith Bratt is her name, and she becomes Tolkien's wife eventually later down the road. But they have this lovely romance that really is also kind of formative for what he goes on to write. But then we're also working into this, and there's a flashback structure, because we're going to go to World War One, where Tolkien was actually in the trenches in France. He was not a regular enlisted man. He was like a officer, but he's in the trenches, and he's got trench fever, and he's kind of could be killing himself doing this, but one of his group is at the front, like literally in the stuff, and he wants to go find him and make sure he's okay because he hasn't heard from him. And that forms this invention where you kind of see the invention of Frodo and Sam and their journey in Lord of the Rings. And then the battlefield is what we see in the battlefields of, you know, Lord of the Rings, and the imagination that comes into that. And then his love of language. He invented his own language that he actually puts into Lord of the Rings, and you see him exploring language when he's at Oxford, and that's really fascinating because he's super intelligent. Nicholas Hoult is really great in this movie. He's so exciting. He's such a great actor, and he really captures all of this, and all this stuff that could be a little too on the nose, he really makes work because he's so compelling.
All of this in under 2 hours.
Yeah. I mean, everybody knows my feelings about Lord of the Rings, the movies, and how I'm not into that stuff, but I was really into this. I was really into this guy. He's really entertaining, and this movie has got a lot of, you know, it's got a great drama, romance, but it's also funny, and the characters are really intelligent and fun to listen to. I dig this movie, man.
That's cool. It sounds good. I was going to make a joke early on that they cut it off just when it starts to get good to make the sequel, but it sounds like they did everything they need to do with this one. I mean,
it does end right at the time when he's writing, beginning to writing The Hobbit.
But do you really want to watch him write The Hobbit? I mean,
not really.
Click, 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 click. That's all. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm not a fan of Lord of the Rings, but I can defend the movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's fan service too. I mean, right. They make it longer and drawn out because people love being in that world, and it works for what it is. But for if you're not into that, you're going to have a Pokemon type scenario. And I feel like that's making fun of it. But really, I mean, Pokemon kind of is a modern day, not the movie per se, but the world, the... You know, people are into that
stuff.
I'm sure
Pokemon people would tell you that it's as elaborate and has its own, you know, mythos the same way that Lord of the Rings does.
Or Star Trek or Star Wars or any of the nerd culture
Marvel
stuff.
Universe, for that matter.
Yeah. And then The Hustle, the movie I wanted to go see.
The Hustle, yes. Anne Hathaway, Rebel Wilson in a story that was first done in 1964, in a movie we'll talk about called Bedtime Story, and then again in 1988 with Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with Steve Martin and Michael Caine. Here it's Anne Hathaway in the Michael Caine role and Rebel Wilson in the Steve Martin role. And they're both con artists who are, they find each other on a train. Rebel Wilson doesn't know she's talking to a fellow con artist and tries to demonstrate her skills as a con artist. And then she says that she's on her way to Beaumont de Samere, which is where Anne Hathaway's character is. And she doesn't want this, you know, lower person, this lesser con artist in her town screwing things up for her. So she tries to get rid of her. Rebel Wilson isn't so easily lost. She makes her way back, and Anne Hathaway takes her in and decides to start teaching her and bring her into the con. And this leads to a really fun sequence that they actually call, interestingly enough, Lord of the Rings. The con that they use is called Lord of the Rings, which is funny. It's them fleecing old men out of trying to marry Anne Hathaway, but then they have to take Rebel Wilson as well. And she's a bizarre character, not unlike what Steve Martin and Marlon Brando both did in their versions of this. And it's funny. And a lot of The Hustle is very funny. There are a lot of big laughs in this movie, but what doesn't quite work is that it's all gags. You've got like six screenwriters on this movie for some reason. And all of them are just kind of pitching jokes, it would seem. At least that's the way it feels. So it's a lot of big jokes, and there are a lot of really funny jokes, but not enough connective tissue. And then you've got this actor, this newcomer who's playing the role that Glenn Headley played in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and Shirley Jones plays in Bedtime Story, who's really weak. He's not a character who really stands out. He's playing this sort of tech millionaire who's got this app, and he's going to be he's the one that they're trying to get to pay for. He's the bet, essentially, trying to get him to pay them money. And he's just a lesser actor than pretty much everybody else involved. He doesn't have the same charisma. Hathaway and Rebel Wilson really blow him off the screen when they're all together, and that makes the ending not work very well in The Hustle. But then, like I said, it's all about the gags. Like, all of the focus is on the gags and not nearly enough of the connective tissue of character, like, especially with David Niven and Marlon Brando doing Bedtime Story, and a little bit lesser set with Caine and Steve Martin, which Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is actually my least of the three in terms of how much I enjoyed it. It's a better movie than The Hustle, but The Hustle's funnier. But they're all actually pretty good when you get down to it, interestingly enough.
That's cool. Well, let's just get down to it then. Maybe. What the hell? My phone's not working.
Oh no!
Well, it's playing it, but I can't hear anything.
No, I don't hear anything either.
Oh well, that was the undisputed.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized undisputed classic.
That was weird. Like, it literally played, didn't make a noise, I didn't change anything, hit it again, and bam.
Who knows?
Bedtime Story.
Bedtime Story, 1964, with Marlon Brando and David Niven. And again, this is a classic story of con artists. One's a big-time con, David Niven. The other one's a small-timer, American, played by Marlon Brando. And what this movie does very much better than the other two is that in Brando, you've got a character who is innately sexual, and he adds this really kind of wolfish, roguish charm to it that obviously Steve Martin and Rebel Wilson don't bring, and that really sets this one apart and actually makes it a little bit better, if a little bit edgier even than the other two, which is interesting. But he likes to use his military uniform as a way of meeting people, meeting women especially, and getting them to give him things. We meet him as he's pulling off a scam on just this little German girl in the middle of nowhere, getting her to give him a ring and a necklace or something, and food and sex. And as he's leaving, he's like leaving this trail of women behind him, all of whom he's promised to marry as he's getting on a train and heading out of town. He happens on the train with David Niven and tells him that he's headed to Beaumont-sur-Mer, and Niven tries to get rid of him, eventually comes back around, and same setup as The Hustle. It's basically, they're all three. This one, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, and The Hustle all use the same structure. And the only difference is the ending of this movie is the only thing that's actually different about any of the structure, because they all use the same notions.
Yeah, I haven't seen Dirty Rotten Scoundrels or The Hustle, but I did see this one. And I liked it, but I still like it for what it is, but it's kind of... When I'm watching it, I'm also trying to think of the other Brando movies, and I wouldn't put it on the level as, like, some of the great ones, and so that was where I struggled with, like, it's good, but it's not, like, it's just kind of, it's a lesser movie, it's the next tier down.
Definitely, it's so much smaller. This is there's a reason why this one wasn't well-remembered, why people think that Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is the movie that The Hustle is actually based on.
And it had me overanalyzing the movie as I'm watching, going, I mean, this is good, it's fun, it's entertaining, but this isn't...
It's not a classic, no.
On the waterfront, which I haven't seen, or The Godfather. It's just kind of it's a fun movie that I think, you know, I'd almost want to watch it again with my head clear now, because sometimes when you're overanalyzing something, it just takes away from the experience, but I did enjoy it.
It's breezy, it's quick, and really, really charming, both Niven and Marlon Brando. And this is not the typical Brando. Like, this
was
not,
awkward, too.
Yeah.
Not but awkward, but just different.
I loved how loose he is in this movie. This is him, like leaving behind all the method stuff, at least, it seemingly, and just being somebody who's kind of in the moment and unselfconscious. And that's, like... He becomes that to such an extraordinary degree later in his career. He just doesn't care, and he's not trying, and he doesn't care if he's being humiliated because he doesn't even realize it. Whereas here, he's fully aware, he's participating in and making himself the joke. And that's really fun to watch. He's really super charming in this movie. There's a scene where he's conning his way out of the army that he plays so brilliantly. It's like, I don't know, it's like he's like Bugs Bunny in that scene. It's so good. I really loved it. And then the scene where he's playing the weirdo brother that has got to be taken to America with the prince, you know. I loved that. I loved that portion of it. It's great. I dug that so much. The ending is, like I said, the only thing that's slightly different. Here we've got this ending that seems to me to be like forced by the time in which this movie was aired. Because in the other two movies, in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels and The Hustle, the character who's being scammed as part of the bet turns out to be a con artist themselves. Sorry to spoil it for you.
That's okay.
They turn out to be a con artist themselves, and they've been conning the cons, and that's the big twist at the end. Here, Brando is forced to fall in love, kind of in a way you don't really buy, that either he or Shirley Jones are actually in love with the time frame and with the way the story plays out. You don't feel like that's a real thing. And they're forced to go off together and be a couple, and he's going to move to Detroit or whatever and be just an everyday guy. And I didn't buy that at all. I don't buy that in any way. Like, that's just never going to work. But that's what the studio, like, forces him to do that based on, like, morality clauses or whatever. The only thing that does work about that ending is David Niven's line at the end is absolutely brilliant. That line delivery, I guess I'm just going to have to live with it. You know, they asked him if he thought that Brando got the better deal with the beautiful woman and the life and the love, and he's going to be left behind with all of the women in the world and all the money in the world, and I guess I'll just have to live with it.
Yeah, I mean, you're not really spoiling the other two, because I feel like that's... Having not seen either one of them, I know that story. I've heard, you know, I don't know if the Simpsons have done it, but anybody who's parodied anything has done that. Scooby-Doo's probably done it. So it's, you know, I've seen that story before.
Bugs Bunny did it. Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's fun. And you mentioned Brando, and that's the other thing. I think watching it a second time would allow me to watch it the way I'm supposed to watch it. When you're just thinking of... I'm just bringing a lot to the movie, and this is such a breezy watch that you don't got to bring shit to this movie, and that's really the way it's meant to be watched. But it's
interestingly
fun.
Enough, it was supposed to be Gregory Peck and Tony Curtis.
Really?
Yeah, Gregory Peck is the Niven character, and Tony Curtis is the Brando.
That'd have been interesting.
Yeah, might not have had the same effect on you if it were those characters.
Maybe not.
And those actors, I mean?
Possibly. And again, I was able to recognize it was good, and it was entertaining. I just wish I would have allowed my mind to be more...
It's just such an outlier in what Brando is known for, you know? This is not method. This is not intense, dramatic, big stage emotions like Streetcar or On the Waterfront, and certainly not what he does in Godfather
right.
or Apocalypse Now. It doesn't even seem like the same actor.
That's for sure. But yeah. Go if you get a chance, it's on Amazon. Oh no, YouTube.
It's
we watched
YouTube.
It on YouTube.
It's on YouTube for
and
free,
you posted it on our site, I believe.
Yeah. It's hard to find. You have to you can't look up the title Bedtime Story
because
you're just going to get like 50 music videos
you
with that title.
You can't even do that on IMDb.
Yeah.
You have to like type in Bedtime Story Brando or something like that.
Yeah, I looked it up on YouTube by Brando, Niven, and Shirley Jones, and that's how I ended up with it.
But it is on our Facebook page if you want to watch it, if you have, an hour and a half, give or take.
I watched this one and Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, which is free on Tubi, on the Tubi app, and then... End of the Hustle this weekend.
I went to like 5 baseball games, so. But yeah, that's our classic. Let's move on to 1989.
Since this is Aunt Bethany's 80th Christmas, I think she should lead us in the saying of grace.
What, dear?
Grace!
Grace! She passed away 30 years ago.
That we have several movies. I don't know if we've seen all of them, but How to Get Ahead in Advertising. Are you familiar with that movie at all?
No, I'm not.
Terrible title. Then there's Going Overboard with Adam Sandler and Billy Bob Thornton.
I did not watch that.
Really?
No.
Why not? It's free on Amazon, I think. I didn't watch it either. I mean, I've seen it years ago, but I don't remember it at all.
I was, you know, I had to pick and choose, and there was one I really wanted to see this week.
We'll get there. Earth Girls Are Easy, I have seen.
Yeah. We were talking about 89 before, about how horny 89 is, and it's really a horny year and a horny series of movies, and that certainly defines this movie. It's about horny aliens.
Without really the payoff, though.
Yeah.
I always found... I mean, it's similar to, you know, Bedtime Story. There's so much... When I watched this movie, I knew who Gina Davis was. I knew who Jim Carrey was. I knew who Jeff Goldblum was. So you're bringing so much to this movie when you're going to watch it, on top of the title. And then you just kind of watch it, and it... I think it's rated PG, maybe, yeah. With the title called Earth Girls Are Easy. I mean, it's fun and goofy and cheesy and very much 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But it's hard to, you almost need to watch it twice, which I'm not going to do.
No.
to really probably watch it the way it's meant to be watched. But I know
people
love it.
I've probably seen it like 5 or 6 times over the years. It's an easy watch, you know, and these are funny people. It's not a great movie. It's really barely a memorable movie, but, you know, Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum are good together.
Right, but they've been good together before.
True.
Better together before. A Fist Fighter, I don't even know what that is.
I wish I would have seen it now, though. I love the title. I want to see people fist fight.
We'll get there. See No Evil, Hear No Evil, another prior Wilder movie.
Yeah, this one's bad. This is bad Gene Wilder and bad Richard Pryor. It's sad, really, to watch this movie. I've seen it a few times over the years. It's not funny. They're just playing the worst of being blind and being deaf and just, oh God, just all the worst thing. People shouting at the deaf guy and, you know, waving at the blind guy. Oh, it does not play well.
I kind of feel though, like the audience that liked it 30 years ago is the same audience that's enjoying Palms now. I mean, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, probably definitely actually. the 15 or 20 people.
If they're still alive. Yeah. Right. 30 years.
That long ago.
You're 60 in 1989. You're 90 now.
Well, I'm saying in 1989, like my dad's age. Okay. You know, my dad was one of like these shitty movies. And not that he would like Palms, but my mom probably would. So I don't.
My mom would, definitely.
Right, so. Yeah.
And my mom, I think, might have liked See No Evil, Hear No Evil. She had kind of a thing for Gene Wilder.
All right. Oddly enough, my dad hated Richard Pryor. Hmm. Not for a racist reason. He just didn't like comics that swore. Big Cosby fan. Huge Cosby fan. I don't know if that's true or not. I totally made that up. The movie I'm excited to talk about, really I've been waiting the whole episode to talk about, is Return of the Swamp Thing.
Yes, Return of the Swamp Thing. What a great movie.
Kinda. In its own way.
This movie's fun, man. Return of the Swamp Thing is a sequel to 1982's Swamp Thing. Same actor who played Swamp Thing that movie, and the same bad guy, too, interestingly enough, both back from that film. Genetic experiments in the swamp somewhere in the south, and this time they've got Heather Locklear in the mix, making T.J. Hooker jokes and being this bubble-headed blonde character who loves plants. And
bubble-headed blonde, but sharp. Like, she passes out and just wakes up with a witty line.
She's quite something. She's super attractive. This is Heather Locklear at her zenith for sure. She is gorgeous.
Yeah, and I found it really odd because she really is the main character of this movie. She's a number two billing, mm-hmm. and Swamp Thing's not number one. He's the and with so and so as Swamp Thing. So, I mean, she's the biggest star in the movie. But she's still number two because she's female. So that, to me, just was right off the bat, put me in like, okay, I'm going to see where this goes. And it's a pretty sexist movie, and as most movies were back then. But just starting there, and I mean, a lot of movies did that. But
right.
I just found that really, really weird because she legit is the main character of this movie. It follows her story, more mm-hmm. or less.
She's the stepdaughter of the bad guy from the first movie who's still out there and creating genetic monstrosities, not unlike Dr. Moreau.
Right.
And some really fun, really some fun practical makeup effects to create those. Like, that's some Stan Winston stuff going on there. That's pretty impressive. And really, Swamp Thing, for 30 years ago, he's pretty impressive looking as a character. And, you know, the evil that he faces up against, the evil genetic mutants he faces off, pretty impressive, I guess, for that time, really. I'm not joking. I was legit impressed by some of them. There's a guy whose head is half elephant that is really impressive. Like, that was cool. It's a silly movie. It really is, but at the same time, it's silly in a way that kind of like Toxic Avenger, where it knows how silly it is, and that's okay. I especially love the sex scene is just glorious. So I was having fun trying to describe this movie to some friends who'd never heard of it before, and I was telling them about the sex scene, and they're like, "How does she have sex with a swamp thing?" I'm like, "Well, he pulls off a piece of himself and he feeds it to her, and then they have a fantasy sequence where he's a guy and not a swamp thing, and then they have sex, and then they wake up and he's a swamp thing again."
Then she says, "Does that really happen?" He goes, "If you want it to have happened," or something like that. Or it's as real as you want it to be, yeah. Or something like that. Yeah, I'm of two minds of this movie, because in a lot of ways, it's a lot of fun. But at the same time, you know, you have like a Cronenberg or someone like that doing this movie, or a young Peter Jackson or something. You got a really cool, creepy movie here that... You know, you could have had two, so it didn't have to be a Toxic Avenger type-like movie. So while I enjoy it, even more so than a Toxic Avenger movie, I thought it was more fun than those
Absolutely.
Are. But I just...
Much better made.
Oh, yeah. But just, I just, part of me was kind of wanting to see, because I guess Alan Moore, the guy who did Killing Joke and Watchmen, kind of one of the more respected comic book writers, his one of the best things he did, I guess, is Swamp Thing. I've never read it, but I'm assuming it's dark based on what he does. There's a lot you could have done with this character and really made a different movie. I mean, I would, you know, today have someone take it on, just do their own thing with it. I'd be curious.
Yeah, I'd be interested in that, because you've got to do the production design, though, just as well as this. This is really designed well.
Oh, yeah.
This is a great character design. And then that voice, I loved his voice. I loved that. That really
so didn't fit at all.
It did not, but it was a great gag.
I know.
When he does speak, and he sounds like Clark Kent. I thought, like, that's great. What a great choice.
Right, you're just expecting this deep, kind of creepy
guttural moan or something.
Yeah, and instead it's just like...
Hello, citizen.
Right. And the bad guys couldn't be more... typical bad guys.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were definitely cartoony, and I mean, it was, you know, it's new enough that they knew better, so they were doing it on purpose. So it was it almost made it better. Like you said, they were aware of
right.
how fun
I mean,
it was.
It's totally fully aware. Like you've got a group of the henchmen or henchwomen in like really tight form fitting clothes. Like that's a self conscious choice right there. I get that.
And for the first time in the history of my life in movies, they had the same last name as me. It's one of the villains, more or less.
Yeah, Zarel.
Yeah, that's my name's Zarel, but everybody calls me Zarul, Zarel, Zarel. There's always different versions, and they've spelled it the same way they spell this character's name. I had to go to IMDb to make sure they were saying it right, because I wasn't sure if it was Drell or Varel
right.
or whatever, because you never... No one can... Z's and V's and D's, they all blend together. And sure enough, they spelled Z-U-R-R-E-L-L. And I was like, people spelled my name that way. That's not how I spell it. But that was kind of fun for me.
Yeah.
Especially when you turn into a good guy, spoiler alert. And then kind of went back to a bad
yeah.
guy, but still a good guy. And I don't know. It's...
It's fun. This
yeah.
is a fun movie, and I didn't expect it to be as fun as it was. I've actually not seen the 1982 Swamp Thing.
Neither have I.
I was so excited about this one because I just thought this is going to be super cheesy and bad, and I actually really just had a lot of fun.
You were all ready to laugh at it, instead
oh, yeah.
laughed with it.
Absolutely.
And that's, I mean, and they
it
were doing it on purpose.
Yeah. To the point where this is actually one of my favorite experiences of 89 movies, right?
Like, it would have really... been fun to watch as a group.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but part of me was like, you know what would have been a good Swamp Thing is Lee Majors. He kind of looked like Lee Majors in the makeup.
He does. Oh my God.
But
wow.
then when the makeup comes off, it looks nothing like Lee Majors. But you would expect that voice to come
right.
out of Swamp Thing,
absolutely.
Not so much the...
yeah, that's a Lee Majors voice for sure.
Oh, man. But yeah, that was the last movie I watched this week, and it really made up for everything else. I mean, not, again, Bedtime Stories, a fine movie, but I'll take this every day of the week.
Swamp Thing is the best Pokemon ever.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is, like, there is, like, DC ties, so they have a little Batman stuff, and not Batman per se, but Arkham Asylum, and
mm-hmm.
that kind of... stuff in there early on in the movie and kind of the credits and whatnot. So there's that neat stuff, and you just wonder what they could do, you know, like someone like Nolan or Fincher today, they really were to try really hard with it.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, we're
Guillermo
here.
Del Toro.
Del Toro would be the best.
Yeah, he would do a great Swamp Thing. Well, he already did.
But he did it. Yeah.
No, it was a fish man. It was a fish man.
I know.
This is a plant guy. She's got a fetish for plants. She talks to her plants. Heather Locklear talks to her plants, and she loves her plants, and those are their only friends. And then she meets Swamp Thing and falls in love.
Like, instantly, too.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't even...
Love at first sight with a Swamp Thing.
Yeah, it went from, oh, I'm your boyfriend? I can't love you the way you need to be loved. And it was like, that was pretty quick. They really escalated this pretty fast. Here, have some celery. I'll just pull a little piece off and nibble on that. What the hell's going on?
But she was into it. It wasn't a date rape.
No, 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 no. It was not.
She was way into him.
Yeah, no. And it really, yeah, the sexism was really more in the fact that her name wasn't the top of this movie.
Right.
For me, I noticed it right off the bat.
She's desperately objectified.
and far and away the biggest star in this movie, even back then. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know she hadn't had Melrose Place yet, but she was still a huge star.
The French guy who's the lead is not... I mean, by the time he made this, he was well past the time when anybody knew who he was.
But you can't put a woman on top. But that was a lot of fun. That is our show this week. Next week, we've got A Dog's Journey. Can't wait to see that. The trailer was great here before Pokemon. My son was all into it. Dennis Quaid's really going for it, I think. I don't know. So in the original one, like he's aware it's the same dog over and over again?
I think so.
Because he is in the trailer here. I don't know how that would... I thought maybe he would die and come back as a kid and be with the dog. Anyway... We may not even talk about that movie. I don't know. John Wick 3, which will obviously be the huge movie. Maybe it'll finally knock Avengers off. I don't know.
I hope so. Nothing against Avengers, but I just want John Wick to be massive because it deserves it.
And then The Sun is Also a Star.
Yeah, some teen romance with an immigration twist, interestingly enough.
Our classic is My Own Private Idaho.
Yes, River Phoenix and Keanu Reeves.
In 89, we've got Cold Feet for Queen and Country, Fright Night Part 2, How I Got Into College, Miracle Mile, and, of course, Roadhouse, which I've never seen. Sean thinks I'll like it because someone gets their throat ripped out, apparently.
Yeah. And Terry Funk's in it, too.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm...
You're gonna look at that and go, there's no way that little Swayze guy beat up Terry Funk. Then you're going to say you could kick his ass.
That
and Sam Elliott's ass.
I don't know. Dancers are pretty tough. I mean, I know they look... I'll give them their credit. I mean, Patrick Swayze is no slouch. But...
Just know that Dalton is the cooler.
I should probably know what that means. I'm sure that everybody else does.
This has one of this movie. Has a line in it that is just my favorite. Like it's the most disgusting. Like, oh god, just horrifyingly wrong, disgusting sex talk that you can imagine. And it's not even like a really innately dirty line. If you said it out loud, you wouldn't realize it. But the context of when it's said is just so horrific. It sticks with me to this day, 30 years later.
And I'll just tell you my, you know, stereotype of this movie is I feel like the people that like it are like my aunts. You know, that age of people, that demographic. Am I wrong?
You're wrong.
Okay.
You're wrong. This is a...
Is it everybody?
This is like an R-rated, like... This is R-rated, like, redneck kind of movie. Like, this is really...
Patrick Swayze?
This is a really redneck movie.
I used to have a hard time seeing, like, a... You know, I don't know, your country boy going, that Patrick Swayze. Loads him in Dirty Dancing.
He's a northerner coming into the southern situation, even though it's in Kansas.
Jesus.
But they're all rednecks. And yeah, Ben Gazzara is the bad guy. He's running this small town like he's the king. And in comes Dalton, the cooler, to turn things around. And he's all zen.
So is this a laugh at it scenario, or is this?
I laugh at it with. I don't think it has. It has a zero self awareness. Like it is a laugh at it movie. It doesn't realize how insanely tacky and cheesy it is.
But how much of that is due to watching it today versus when it came out in '89?
I mean, Swayze was so, you know, like he was kind of in his time, you know. So people were kind of with it, I guess, and ignoring it. And he's really naked in the movie, so I'm thinking people...
I'm in now.
Ladies were really loving him.
That's why I said my aunts, because when they were 30 years ago, my aunts were younger than I am now, so that's why they all had it. Not to specify anything.
There's a lot of violence and a lot of, you know, there are monster trucks and explosions and shit.
Can't wait.
You gotta see this movie.
Well, I'm gonna.
It should be the classic.
I'm kidding. My Own Private Idaho has now moved to 89. Roadhouse is the classic.
It's going to be the center of the show.
Kind of like Swamp Thing was. But that is our show. I do want to thank our Patreon supporters for supporting the podcast. We will start with the key grip level, Charlie Messing and Jason Bryant, the Hall of Fame podcaster, who the wrestling podcaster. Our character actors, Christina Cato, Josh and Beth Paul, and Cousin Jeff.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Our special effects level, Corey Finneran and Sarah Morrell.
May the Force be with you.
Our associate producer, Jason Mollett.
Everybody has to eat shaving cream once in a while.
And our movie stars, Uncle Jeff and Dave Sievers.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
If you want to be a Patreon supporter, head over to ihatecritics.net/Patreon to get yourself a credit on the show and help support the show. Then buy some podcast merch at that same site. Click on the podcast merch tab and tell your friends about us. Take pictures with the merch. Whatever you can to help us grow the show. Write and review the show. We'll read any reviews on the air. I get them once a month, so if you left a review and I haven't got it yet, I apologize. I will read it when it comes through. I just hasn't come through to me yet. If you're getting antsy, feel free to hit me up on Facebook. I'll go look it up as well. Since Josh isn't here, I can't play our outro yet because we don't have a new one. So we will see, what do you like better, the Green Mile or Caddyshack?
Caddyshack?
Hey, me too.
Hey, what do you know?
I thought the quarter was going to have to play a role here.
I really, like, I've turned around on the Green Mile a lot. I liked it when it came out, and
me too.
Not anymore.
And I haven't seen it again. It's just kind of, I've gotten further away from it and just like, it's too long. No, my son took this quarter and just grabbed it and ran away, and I yelled. I mean, I really got mad. No, that comes back to this table. This is part of the show. He was kind of surprised. I thought I was supposed to pick up quarters when I saw him lying around. Not this one. It's seen more movies than I have. Dumb and Dumber, The Haunting, 1999.
Dumb and Dumber.
I agree. I did not like Haunting. The Haunting
is terrible.
Speaking of, while we're here waiting for the load, you wrote a review on Pitch Black, a movie that I didn't like when it came out. I haven't gone back and watched it. I just remember hating it when I saw it. I couldn't tell you why, because it's been forever. But talk about that movie a little bit.
I enjoy Pitch Black. It's sci-fi schlock with a star performance by Vin Diesel that's really, really fun. I dig the character of Riddick. And some of that is the shine that it gets from Chronicles of Riddick, which is really... even better sci-fi schlock with big violence, lots of blood and guts, really good blood and guts in Chronicles of Riddick. And so it makes me like Pitch Black just because it's so related.
Pulls
to,
it up a little bit.
Yeah, it raises it up. And I dig the monsters. I like Vin Diesel. I like Rhoda Mitchell. So I'm into it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'll have to rewatch it again. We'll see. Here's a good matchup. Planet of the Apes, 1968, Ghostbusters, 1984.
I really like Planet of the Apes a lot, but if I was going to watch something, I'm going to watch Ghostbusters.
Yeah, sometimes nostalgia just can't lose. 28 Days Later, Sin City.
Sin City.
I agree.
28 Days Later is awesome, though.
I like it a lot. Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Starsky and Hutch.
Captain America.
Yeah.
Starsky and Hutch is pretty funny.
I do like Starsky and Hutch, and part of me wants to just be like, hey, Josh, I love the show. But that's not fair. L.A. Confidential or Primeval?
Yeah, it's going to be L.A. Confidential every day.
Red Eye, Eagle Eye, which I do like better.
Red Eye is actually not that bad. That's the Cillian Murphy, Rachel McAdams movie.
Is that Stephen King? No, Wes Craven, right? Or no?
Wes Craven, yeah.
Why is it Stephen King, not Wes Craven? Life or Something Like It or Walking Tall?
With The Rock?
The Rock, and then the one with Angelina Jolie and Edward Burns.
Wow, that movie sucks. Walking Tall isn't very good either.
Well, that's kind of fun.
I like Walking Tall enough, more than I like Life or Something Like It. That movie's terrible.
Ooh, this might be a coin flip. The Talented Mr. Ripley or Blade Runner?
82. Talented Mr. Ripley.
recency bias is Blade Runner, because I haven't seen Tales of Mr. Ripley in forever. I loved it at the time.
It's one of my all-time favorite movies. It gets better year after year for me. I'm going to get George involved.
Yeah, but I hate to vote against it. Kind of want Tales of Mr. Ripley to win, because I just feel like it did. Ted's won. I just feel like I don't want to be wrong here, because it's been so long.
Mm-hmm.
The Green Mile or the Simpsons movie?
Simpsons. All the way.
We do need to bring the Tales of Mr. Ripley to the show.
Absolutely.
Poltergeist, Coming to America.
Poltergeist?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I would watch Coming to America, I think. Yeah. Maybe not. It's hard to say.
It's hard to say. Yeah, I could shift on the mood. I like Coming to America enough.
This might be fun. Come on, God. I know you're not there, but... Interstellar, The Hangover.
It's like Josh is still here.
The Hangover.
It's The Hangover, yeah.
Would have been The Hangover if he was here, right?
It would have been, yes.
Harry Potter, The Prisoner of Azkaban, or Outbreak?
That's tough. I love Outbreak. I'm alone on that one. I don't care. I dig Outbreak a lot. It's Outbreak for me.
Oh, it's Outbreak for me, too.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, I'm not the biggest. Like Potter, I don't hate Harry Potter. I just don't get it. And Outbreak, I don't hate Outbreak. I remember
I like
finding
it
cheesier the second time around.
It's the one Dustin Hoffman performance I can still tolerate to this day.
Wag the dog.
Even then, he's his part of it.
Ugh. Ooh, this is hard for me. It's not a School of Rock, but That Thing You Do or School of Rock.
Yeah,
I really like That Thing You Do. That Thing You Do
is a really fun movie.
For similar reasons, I like School of Rock. Both Passion Project for Linklater, but Fargo or The Celebration?
Fargo.
I agree. Christine or Shoot 'Em Up?
I'm not supposed to like Shoot 'Em Up, but that movie gets me in the strangest way. I actually don't care for Christine, so.
See, I read the books. I have this tie to it that I feel like I like it more than I do. And Shoot 'Em Up, I thought was kind of forgettable, but we can flip the coin. I don't feel bad about winning or losing this one. Tails, Shoot 'Em Up wins.
That movie never wins anything.
King Kong, 1933, Juno, 2007.
Juno. I love King Kong, but Juno is my movie.
Yeah. Three Kings, Borat.
Three Kings.
Yeah, as much as I like Borat, Three Kings is pretty phenomenal. Come on, internet.
What is David O. Russell doing? When's he coming back?
I'm going to throw his name in IMDb real quick to see what he's got going on.
Rarely ever hear what he's up to these days. It's been a while. Like, what was it? Silver Linings Playbook, the last one?
Was that?
Or the
American
Hustle,
I think.
American Hustle, yeah.
Or Joy.
Oh, yeah, Joy. Yeah, I guess he was working a lot there for a while.
He's got something in pre-production, not Fade Away, so he's got a ways before he does anything. Well, that's producer. We'll just go to director. Yeah, he's got nothing on the horizon, it looks like.
Really? Wow.
But, I mean, who knows? Something just pop up knowing him. No, he's one of my top three guys right now, I think.
Oh, absolutely, with that and... I Heart Huckabees, which is incredibly underrated.
Not to mention American Hustle and Silver Linings Playbook and even Joy.
Flirting with Disaster, even.
Yeah. Let's see. Blade Trinity, Animal House.
Animal House.
I agree. Rogue One, Hacksaw Ridge.
Rogue One.
It's Hacksaw Ridge for me, so I will flip it. Gotta win one of these, right? Rogue One.
Yes.
I mean, I can stomach Rogue One. Avengers, Age of Ultron, Shaun of the Dead.
Avengers.
Shaun of the Dead on this one. As much as I don't like that one, I really don't like Age of Ultron. So. Age of Ultron. I'm feeling like Josh here. You and George are teaming up on me. Oh, this is interesting. Amos Perros or Man on the Moon?
Man on the Moon for me.
I don't know. With that documentary being pretty fresh, I'll go Man on the Moon, but I remember liking Amos Perros a lot.
I need to see it again to really know.
Apocalypse Now, Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy.
Apocalypse Now.
There's been a couple of these where there's the obvious better movie, but I'd probably watch the other one.
I don't dislike Anchorman at all.
Right.
I like Anchorman a lot. But
Apocalypse Now is, yeah. Apocalypse Now.
I kind of throw in Apocalypse Now once a year where I haven't revisited Anchorman recently.
But when I revisit it like 5 times in 3 months or something like that. Bridget Jones' Diary, Pearl Harbor.
Bridget Jones' Diary by a lot.
The Bridge on the River Kwai or House of Wax, 2005.
Bridge on the River Kwai.
House of Wax when it came out. The original one. Still Bridge on the River Kwai. Aliens, Amelie.
Amelie.
Sorry, Josh. Hero, Punch Drunk Love, 2002 Hero, the martial arts movie.
Punch Drunk Love.
I agree.
Yes, I picked the Sandler. It's a good Sandler.
Scream 4, The Sandlot.
I have no passion for either of these. I think The Sandlot is one of the most overrated movies of all time, but Scream 4 isn't very good. Coming off especially the recent experience I had with Scream 3, I can't imagine Scream 4 brings it back around. I'll go with The Sandlot. I guess that's the popular choice.
I'll go with The Sandlot just for the sheer fact that it's baseball. I'm kind of with you. It's not a movie I go and quote when it comes to baseball movies.
Yeah.
It's far down the list, but I don't hate it.
Everybody I know refers to Smalls, whenever that Smalls thing is.
Yeah, even my kids say that on occasion. Oddly, my wife, who hates baseball, loves that movie. King Kong, 1933, Frost Nixon.
Ooh, that's a good one, because Frost Nixon's a really good movie, but so is Kong. Yeah. I'm actually going to pick... It's tough. That is tough. Frost Nixon.
Just for shits and giggles, I'll flip the coin. Because I really don't know. They're so... different movies. Neither one I'm just going to put in. Right. So I can't go to that one. Iconic, obviously, King Kong, but I'll just flip it and see. Hey, I won one. King Kong wins. Finally not passionate about something and I win it. League of Their Own, Memento.
Memento.
I agree.
I need to watch Memento again soon. I miss Memento.
Shanghai Noon, Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo.
Are you fucking kidding me?
That's the show.